Today we come to the fifth and final example of how to act like our Father, how to walk in love, and it's this. Don't harbor sinful attitudes. Instead, be kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving.
Welcome to The Word Unleashed with Tom Pennington. Tom is pastor teacher at Countryside Bible Church in Southlake, Texas. Hi, I'm Bill Wright, and today we continue with part 11 of Tom's series, Walking in Our Father's Footsteps. Friend, do you ever find yourself harboring sinful attitudes in your heart toward others? And do those attitudes sometimes spill out into your words or actions for everyone to hear and see? In Ephesians 4, the Apostle Paul reminds us that our words matter. They reveal the condition of our hearts and can either honor God or lead us into sin. Paul challenges us to put aside corrupt communication and instead speak words that build up, encourage, and minister grace to those around us. Today, Pastor Tom Pennington will continue guiding us through this wonderful passage and show us how to communicate in a way that pleases our Heavenly Father and gives grace to others. So let's join Tom for more now, here on The Word Unleashed.
I first heard my father-in-law speak about the famous volcano Pelée. Maybe you've never heard about Mount Pelée. It's a volcano located on the island of Martinique. That historic volcano began giving its warnings on May 5th, 1902. Because of the importance of the coming elections there on the island, the politicians assured the people that this was a false alarm, as there had been many before, that nothing would come of it, but there were continuous warnings, both from the scientists as well as from the volcano itself. It was on a Sunday morning, May 8th, 1902, that Pelée exploded in a violent eruption. One author describes it like this. At 7:52 a.m., the upper mountainside ripped open, and a dense black cloud shot out horizontally. A second black cloud rolled upwards, forming a gigantic mushroom cloud and darkening the sky for a 50-mile radius. The initial speed of both clouds was later calculated to be over 420 miles an hour. The horizontal pyroclastic cloud hugged the ground and sped downward toward the city of St. Pierre, appearing black and heavy, glowing hot from the inside. It consisted of superheated steam and volcanic gases and dust, with temperatures exceeding an estimated 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. In under 1 minute, the pyroclastic cloud reached and covered the entire city, instantly igniting everything flammable that it came in contact with. In less than 1 minute's time after the volcano erupted, the entire population of the city of St. Pierre, at the time some 30,000 people, were killed. In fact, in the entire city, there were no survivors except for one man. One man who was held in a cell below the level of the streets. This man had been condemned to die and was there awaiting execution. For 3 days before, showers of cinders had fallen and had completely blocked the window of his cell, and that's what protected him from that pyroclastic cloud, from the blast. That cloud swept across the city, out into the harbor. All the ships that were near the city itself were immediately incinerated. I've seen several photographs that were taken shortly after this eruption, and if you've seen photos of Hiroshima or Nagasaki after the atomic explosions there, that's what the city looked like. Absolute, complete, and utter devastation. So I thought about that volcano eruption this week. I thought, what a graphic illustration of the destructive power of our attitudes. You see, our attitudes, like the magma and gases within that volcano, often sit and simmer and boil beneath the surface of our souls. And then, in a moment's time, they come spewing out, destroying everything in their path. That's how Paul describes them in the passage that we come to in Ephesians 4. Again, let me remind you of the context. In Ephesians 4:1, Paul says, I want you to live in a way that's worthy of your new position in Christ. And then he sets out to explain what that looks like in the rest of the letter. To walk worthy, we must walk in unity, he says in chapter 4, verses 2 through 16. If we're going to walk worthy, we must walk in new life. Chapter 4, verse 17, down through verse 24. And now we find ourselves in the middle of a third section about how to walk worthy of our new position in Christ, and that is to walk in love. That's the theme of Ephesians 4, verse 25, down through chapter 5, verse 2. Walk in love. Paul summarizes the theme of this paragraph down in verse 1 of chapter 5. Look at it with me. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love. If we want to walk in a way that's worthy of our new sonship to God, then we must walk in our Father's footsteps. We must imitate Him and live a life of love. Now, Paul gives us in this section five illustrations or examples of how to imitate God by walking in love. We've already studied four of those examples. Let me remind you of them. In verse 25, we learned, don't lie, instead speak the truth. God always speaks the truth. We must speak the truth as His children as well. Verses 26 and 27, don't get sinfully angry, instead resolve your conflicts. God seeks us out. He's the one who initiated reconciliation with us. We're to imitate Him in that way. Number three, don't steal, instead work hard and be generous. We learn that in verse 28. We need to get a whole new mindset about work and about resources. They're not merely for us. We are not only not to take from others, we are to work hard to be able to give to others who have genuine need. Last week, we saw the fourth of these illustrations. Don't tear down with your words. Instead, build others up. In verses 29 and 30. Don't tear others down, but instead build them up. Words have tremendous power. We saw that, and we're to choose them carefully. This past week, a couple of people shared some interesting insights with me about last week's message. One person gave me a card with a stick figure that had been hung by the neck, you know, like in the children's game Hangman, you know, the word game Hangman. And there was another stick figure standing nearby, and that stick figure has a balloon coming out of his mind that says, words will never hurt you, huh? Think about that a moment. Also, one of my daughters reminded me this week about something that she had said when she was much younger. Sheila had gotten on to her and her sister about how they were relating to each other, how they were speaking to one another, and she had taken her to the text we looked at, Ephesians 4:29, and reminded them of how we were to speak to each other. And then just to make sure they got it, Sheila, like any good teacher, reviewed and said, so, are we supposed to tear each other down? After just a moment's thought, with all the genuineness she could muster, one of my daughters said, no, Mom, we're supposed to tear each other up. Today we come to the fifth and final example of how to act like our Father, how to walk in love, and it's this. Don't harbor sinful attitudes. Instead, be kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving. Don't harbor sinful attitudes. Instead, be kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving. Look at verses 31 and 32 of Ephesians 4. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. These two verses have to do with the sinful attitudes that you and I can harbor in our hearts toward others and how we express those attitudes outwardly. We have to be especially vigilant, especially careful with our attitudes when we speak, because whether you like it or not, when you speak, your attitudes are on display for everyone to see. Have you ever found yourself saying, boy, that guy has an attitude? How did you know that? You knew that because we can discern attitude in a couple of ways. Obviously, we can discern attitude by what someone says, by verbal communication. You can pick it up in the content of what they say. But you can also pick it up non-verbally. You can pick up a person's attitude when they're talking by the tone of voice they use, by their body language, whether they're sighing or rolling their eyes or snorting or looking amazed or looking disgusted. All of those things communicate what? Attitude. Let me illustrate the different attitudes that can be communicated through both tone and body language using just one English word, the very simple word, okay. Okay is a good word, can be used wonderfully. But you tell me what attitudes are communicated if I say the word okay like this. Okay. Or okay. Or I roll my eyes and say, okay. Or I look disgusted. Okay. Or angry. Okay. All of those things, you picked up attitude, the same word, simply by tone and body language, facial expression. We communicate our attitudes. Where do all those expressions of attitude begin? They begin in the heart. The words you choose, the tone that you use, your body language, all betray what you're thinking in your heart. So if your attitudes are bad, guess what? Your communication will be as well. And so in verses 31 and 32, Paul goes to the source of our bad communication. He confronts our bad attitudes and how we express them. And he tells us then what to replace those bad attitudes with. So Paul begins then by identifying our bad attitudes and their expressions. Let's look at our bad attitudes together. Verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Now, let me just say, when you read that verse, don't think about somebody else, because this is who we all are by nature. Before Christ, we all were like this without exception. You know, I understand society puts this nice little veneer. We live in Texas and everybody's friendly and nice. That's not an accurate description of the human heart. That's not how people really are. That is a facade. It is a veneer. Unbelieving people are like verse 31 describes. If you doubt that, just pick up the Dallas Morning News or the Star Telegram and read a little bit about the local politicians. Or better yet, go on the internet to one of the websites that just puts things like news. Just innocuous articles about news. And then read the comments that people post. When people think there's a degree of anonymity, maybe you've been tempted to do this. When they think that nobody's really going to know who it is or care, then you see the heart. And they just pour out this bitterness and hatred and anger and viciousness. That is, my friends, who we are by nature. You remember what Paul described to Titus in Titus chapter 3, verse 3? He says, we ourselves, this is how all unbelievers are, we're foolish, disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our lives in malice, hateful, and hating one another. That's a description of humanity. That's a description of all of us apart from grace. Now, when you look at verse 31, all of those are sinful responses to others that come out of us, that grow in us, either in response to real wrongs or perceived wrongs. Could be either one. Every person we know, understand this, every person that you know, whatever relationship you have with them, every person you know will sin against you. There's not an exception. And here's the rest of the bad news, every person that you know, you will sin against as well. The problem is that because we are fallen by nature, we add sin to sin. So that when somebody sins against us, or we think they've sinned against us, rather than dealing with that in a right and godly way, what do? We sin in response. We choose any number of bad attitudes and their reactions. And Paul lists them here. The first bad attitude that Paul warns us about is bitterness. Let all bitterness. Aristotle called this attitude the resentful spirit that refuses to be reconciled. It's a kind of hardness that harbors resentment, and particularly resentment about the past. William Barclay writes, many of us have a way of nursing our anger to keep it warm. You ever been there? brooding over the insults and the injuries which we have received. This word bitterness describes a person, and it's true of all of us at one time or another, who nurses his or her resentment and keeps a list of wrongs. This is part of human fallenness. You remember in Romans 3 when Paul wants to indict all of humanity and say we're all guilty before God? He includes this. He says, we all have a mouth full of bitterness. Unfortunately, the person who is bitter toward others begins to show it. That hardness and that's a part of their souls eventually expresses itself outwardly in their demeanor, in their appearance, in their words, in their tone. They'll become hard and harsh, even toward people who aren't the primary object of their bitterness. You can spot a bitter person if they've lived with it long enough. Everything is sour. Nothing is good. They see the negative in everything. They are eaten up with bitterness. Eventually, they become cold, hard, harsh people who alienate themselves from everybody, even those they think they love. And this is easy, folks. Holding on to wrongs is easy because it is natural, it is human. By the way, this is a particular temptation in the relationship of marriage. In fact, if we were to turn to Colossians, in Colossians 3:19, Paul says to spouses, be careful not to become embittered against your spouse. Why is that a temptation in marriage more than any other relationship? Because guess what? You know more about that person than any other person, and they know more about you. They've seen more of your sin than any other person has seen. You have sinned against them more than any other person. And so there's a real temptation in marriage to become embittered. People keep a list. And I've seen this even in some marriage counseling. People keep sometimes a literal list and oftentimes a mental list of past grievances. Let me just ask you this. Do you have a ready list of mental grievances of the times a particular person has sinned against you? When I lived in California, I had a friend who called it gunny sacking. You remember those burlap bags? And he said, you know, it's like people take, and every time somebody sins against them, they shove it down in this bag. And then an argument comes along, and they've got a ready supply of ammunition. They reach into the bag, and you remember when you, and what about the time you, listen, if you keep such a mental list of people's wrongs against you, then by biblical definition, you are bitter. And if you nurse that bitterness, it will come out often in the next sinful attitude that Paul describes. Look at the next bad attitude he confronts, wrath. The word translated wrath comes from a Greek word that means to burn. This word is also translated rage, angry temper, outburst of anger. This is, as the Roman writer Seneca called it, an emotional explosion, an emotional eruption. This is the person who explodes. That is an outburst of anger. They go from seeming calm and quiet, and in a moment's time when something doesn't go their way, there is an outburst. There's an explosion, an eruption. Galatians 5:20 says this is one of the deeds of the flesh, and those who are characterized by this as a pattern of life will not be in heaven. You can see an example of this kind of thing in Acts. Look at Acts chapter 19. Acts 19, verse 28. You remember in Ephesus, when Paul showed up, there was a man named Demetrius, a silversmith, who made silver shrines of the little goddess there. They had the temple fire, and he stirs up the crowd. He says, listen, if we let this guy stay in here, he's going to mess up the deal we've got going. He's going to ruin us. Verse 27, there's a danger that this trade of ours fall into disrepute and that the temple of the great goddess Artemis be regarded as worthless, and she'll be dethroned from her magnificence. So what happens, verse 28, when they heard this, they were, here's our word, filled with rage. They went from quietly listening to this man make his speech to an outburst of anger. And in their case, they began crying out, great is Artemis of the Ephesians. The whole city was filled with confusion. They rushed into the theater, dragging along Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's traveling companions from Macedonia. I've been in that theater in Ephesus. And I can picture that scene. In a moment's time, there's this outburst, this eruption. Let me ask you, do you frequently have outbursts of anger in one or more of your relationships? If so, understand this. Every time that happens, it is a sin against God. There's a third bad attitude Paul identifies here. It's the word anger. Now, let me warn you, this can be a little confusing. This is different than the word wrath. However, the Greek word that's translated as anger here is often also translated wrath. So if I can give you a little help, when you see in the New Testament, in your English Bible, when you come to the word wrath, it could be either of these words. It could be the word for outburst, the word wrath we just looked at, or it could be this word anger. Now, Seneca said this particular Greek word, that's translated anger here, refers to a settled, gnawing hostility. This isn't the explosion. This is a slow, simmering burn. You see, some people blow up when they get angry. Others clam up. They allow the anger to live in their hearts. They just let it steep. They let it seethe inside their souls. But left unaddressed, it eventually does what? It becomes the explosion. It's like a volcano. The magma and gas continues to build below the surface, sometimes as far down as 100 miles below the surface of the ground. But it has nowhere to go but up. And so eventually, it can only stay there and seethe so long, and eventually it explodes to the surface. The word anger describes the steady, slow, sort of lava buildup happening inside the mountain or inside the soul. The word wrath describes the sudden eruption. But if you let anger, this slow simmering boil, grow in your heart, it will destroy you. You cannot hold fire in your soul and not be burned. Let me give you a couple of examples of what this looks like. How does this slow boil, simmering anger look? I think several weeks ago I mentioned to you the story of Ahab and Naboth. Ahab was a king, you remember, in Israel, and he wanted Naboth's vineyard, which was near his palace. And Naboth believed rightly that the Old Testament said the land should be kept within families, and so he refused to sell it. Well, Ahab didn't have an outburst. He didn't explode all over Naboth. Instead, he had anger, this seething, slow boil. Let me show you how it demonstrated itself. 1 Kings 21:4. Here's what this kind of anger looks like. Ahab came into his house sullen and vexed because of the word which Naboth had spoken to him, for he said, "I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers." And here's what he did. He lay down on his bed, turned his face to the wall, and ate no food. That is an expression of this kind of anger, that slow boil anger. It clams up and lets it just seethe. Now, this kind of anger that clams up toward the person they're angry with sometimes will express itself in other ways. Not toward that person, maybe, but it's like a pot simmering on a stove. If you've ever watched a pot simmering with a lid on it, you know, it's coming to a slow boil. Something's happening inside, you know, and occasionally the lid will tilt just a little bit and something will escape. This person is like that. When a person holds this kind of slow boil anger inside, it'll sometimes be ventilated in unusual ways. Sometimes this person will delight in privately carrying out their anger, maybe against some object, a pillow or the wall or whatever it is. Or sometimes to carry out their anger, they'll actually injure themselves. Or they'll push themselves beyond all limits, exercising strenuously or something else, as an expression of that anger that's pent up inside. But the bottom line is, whatever path your anger takes, and we all struggle with anger, don't we? Whatever path your anger takes, whether you're prone to blow up and sort of let it all out, or whether you're the person who clams up and keeps it in the heart, we must not let it continue in our hearts. Instead, we have to deal with it, and we have to deal with it quickly. You remember what we learned back in verse 26? Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't go to bed. Don't let a day end without dealing with the source of the anger and resolving the conflict.
That's Tom Pennington here on The Word Unleashed with part 11 of his 14-part series, Walking in Our Father's Footsteps. Tom will continue with part 12 for you next time, and we hope you'll join us then. Nothing is more foundational to the health of your own Christian life than prayer. Unfortunately, it's one of the most neglected Christian disciplines in the church today. How can you grow in your understanding and practice of this important discipline? Join Pastor Tom Pennington at this year's Faithful Stewards Conference, June 27th and 28th at Countryside Bible Church in Southlake, Texas. This year's theme is Loving Christ by Praying for His Sheep. There's no cost for the conference, but registration is required. Visit us today at thewordunleashed.org to register. The Word Unleashed is made possible because of the prayers and financial gifts of individuals like you. Please consider partnering with us. You can find out how to do so by visiting us online at The Word Unleashed. And now for Tom Pennington and the entire team, I'm Bill Wright. Thanks for listening to The Word Unleashed, exalting God's glory, explaining God's truth.